ask you to stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty for all.
Please call the roll.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas? Ms. Nauzer?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. McDavid?
Here.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
We have minutes from the regular council meeting of January 19, 2016. Are there any corrections? May I have a motion second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Are there any corrections to the agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move Bill 1416.
I want to add R1416, Resolution 1416, to the agenda. Both will be under old business.
Actually, R1416 will be new business.
B1416 will be old business, and R1416 will be new business.
New business.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Welcome. We have several opportunities during the council meeting for public comment. After public hearings, old business, new business. And at the end of the meeting, we offer a open comment section where we yield the podium to anybody who wants to talk about anything for 3 minutes. All individuals who are representing themselves will be granted 3 minutes. If you primarily speak for a group that's involved in an issue, you may ask for and will be entitled to 5 minutes. I'll invite Mr. Jim Lovelace from the Cosmo Luncheon Club to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, staff, and the public. My name is Jim Lovelace. I live at 2404 Topaz Drive, and I'm here tonight speaking for the Cosmopolitan Luncheon Club. I realize when I talk to this group that I'm kind of talking to the choir here, but for the benefit of the public and those insomniacs who might actually be listening or watching us tonight, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the Cosmopolitan Club. The Cosmopolitan International Club is the diabetes folks. We are the people who contribute to fighting, researching, diagnosing diabetes, and helping in the treatment of it. We were instrumental in establishing the Diabetes Center here in Columbia. Our latest project as a local club is the support of Camp Hickory Hill, which is a summer camp for diabetic children, as well as funding the training and the gift of service animals to diabetic, these animals able to help people recognize when they have a seizure coming on. But we are also partners, dedicated partners, with the City of Columbia through the Parks and Recreation Department. Anyone who's taken a child to an organized sport, baseball or softball, or an adult playing softball, knows that we have a great big regional park called Cosmo Park on the north end of town that was begun with funding from the Cosmopolitan Luncheon Club. Those folks who are in the south and like to play tennis or fish in the lake for trout that the Conservation Department stocks at Cosmo Bethel Park are aware of that. If you exercise at the Arc, and you go upstairs to use the machines or the track, before you turn and walk up the stairs, if you'll look straight ahead at the plaque on the wall by the doors of the gym, you'll see that the Cosmopolitan Luncheon Club gave money to build and maintain that gym. We have picnic shelters in various parts of town. We, 2 or 3 years ago, dedicated $125,000 for the play equipment, and the trail at Woodridge Park behind Women's and Children's Hospital. And then our latest gift has been to the J.W. Blind Boone Heritage Foundation to help in the restoration and the landscaping of the Blind Boone home. These are just to name a few of the things that we do. So as a member of the Cosmopolitan Luncheon Club and coming to you as one of the officers of the club, it is a great pleasure to stand in front of you and let you know of our latest partnership with the city. Mr. Mayor, if you would come down and join me, please. We are the subject of public hearing 516 and then Bill 1516, which are bills for the resolution, or a resolution in a bill for the development, or maybe I should say the redevelopment of the southeast corner of Nifong Park, where we are cooperating with the Parks and Recreation Department to remake that corner of Nifong, soon to be referred to, we hope, as Cosmo Corner in Nifong Park. So, Mr. Mayor, it's a pleasure to make this payment to you, and there'll be four more that come with it as that project proceeds.
Speaking for the citizens of Columbia, we are so grateful to the legacy of the Cosmo Luncheon Club. You've made Columbia a better place, and you've made Columbia a better place for many generations to come. Thank you so much. Those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on Wednesday prior to the council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic. Tonight we have one request. I will yield 5 minutes to Rachel Taylor.
Hard to follow a guy with an enormous check. I'll plan this better next time. So, my name is Rachel Taylor, and I live at 119 Clinton Drive in the First Ward. I'm representing Race Matters and Friends, a racial equity activist group here in Columbia. I know you've seen my colleague Lynn Maloney many times. These comments are a response to the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, Columbia Police Department's report for December 2015, addressing Pillar 1, Building Trust and Legitimacy, as prepared by Lieutenant Barbara Buck. Pillar 1 is described in this way on page 6. People are more likely to obey the law when they believe that those who are enforcing it have the legitimate authority to tell them what to do. The public confers legitimacy on those they believe are acting in procedurally just ways. The President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, Columbia Police Department's report December 2015, was distributed for the pre-council meeting held on January 4th, 2016, and presented verbally by Lieutenant Barbara Buck at that time. It reports that the main two things that are perceived to be problematic between law enforcement and the community are implicit bias and racial discrimination. The changes recommended by the report include adopting a guardian mindset, defined as a mindset in which guardians are members of the community defending from within on page 10, and incorporating procedural justice through policies and practices that guide police departments in their interactions with the community. And this is all a summary of that pillar one. In the training section of recommendation 1.1, the police department reports that they've pursued training for all police personnel in foundations of strategic awareness in 2014, and for supervisors and administrators in procedural justice for law enforcement agencies in 2015. It's great to hear that they're working on meeting recommendation 1.1 through training. I'm a trainer, so I tend to yay training. But we'd like to encourage them to pursue education for all police personnel, especially those who are on the front lines, not just supervisors and administrators. I bring that up because page 12 in the practice section of recommendation 1.1 indicates that there is still evidence of low morale in the first line employees and supervisors. if you want the community to trust and respect law enforcement personnel. The law enforcement personnel must need to feel supported by a culture that values their investment in the community. Invest in building a police department culture that values quality communication with the community and promotes transparency, diversity, and inclusion. This starts not only with the mentality of guardianship, but with a true partnership of the police department with the community. You aren't protecting us. We are protecting each other. Commitment to a police culture that values community relationships can address one of the questions to that report about representation in the police department that reflects the community. Chief George Turner explains what has worked in recruiting black officers in Atlanta, Georgia, in Beth Schwartzopfel's Lessons for Bratton on How to Recruit Black Officers from the Marshall Project, published June 11th, 2015. The truth is, says Turner, the best recruiters are our officers, their friends, and their family members. They think the way they think. They look the way they look. That became one of the best recruiting tools for us. It becomes easier because you have a history. We support an inclusive, transparent culture that builds the kind of officers that can recruit their friends and family members because the police clearly act in cooperation with the community. We strongly encourage City Council and the Columbia Police Department to take advantage of education and training programs within Columbia that already exist. For example, the Diversity Awareness Partnership Program has resources available to connect the police department with the community. And if you don't know how to get in touch with them, you can follow us on Facebook at Race Matters Friends or on our Twitter account. We'll get you in touch. Finally, the training section does mention training the community in Recommendation 1.1. And I would encourage representatives of the city and the police department to think that this might indicate a victim-blaming approach that denies historical evidence of racism and violence in policing in America. I would like to see the Columbia Police Department present themselves as co-learners in community building. Officer Hester did come to a Race Matters and Friends meeting, and at that meeting offered to teach us his implicit bias program, which I think is a great sign for the kind of co-learning I'd like to see. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please read PH 4-16.
Public hearing 4-16 is the construction of the Manor Drive Stormwater Improvement Project.
Staff, please.
This public hearing is for the construction of 420 feet of new stormwater pipe in the area of Manor and Maplewood Drive, as shown on this map. As early as 2002, complaints were received regarding stormwater control on Manor Drive itself. After inspection of the stormwater pipe between 404 and 408 Manor, it was determined this system is no longer functional as the pipe is collapsing and sinkholes are forming in the yards. This project will connect inlets on Manor Drive to an existing stormwater system on Maplewood Drive. Staff is expediting this project at this time in an effort to maximize the coordination with the Manor Drive sidewalk project that's coming and the Manor Drive waterline project that's coming. These improvements are scheduled for late spring, early summer 2016. An estimated cost of this project is $75,000 and it will be paid for with stormwater funds. An interested parties meeting was held on December 9th for this project in 2015 with four property owners attending and expressing support for this project to move forward at this time. So with that, I'd like to answer any questions I can about this.
Any questions by council? I'll open the public hearing. I'll invite anyone who wants to speak to come forward.
Hello, my name is Keenan Simon. I own the property at 404 Manor Drive. And the one thing I'd like to discuss is 404, 405, and 407 are on a private sanitary lateral. And I would at least like the city to consider the replacing that lateral. I know that they are put on a petition for a wait list to have that lateral become a dedicated easement and replaced, but if the construction for the storm sewer was to disrupt that lateral line, I would at least like them to have something in place, or I guess an option to maybe speed that project along if the residents at 407, 405, and 404 were able to have that petition ready prior to construction. That's all I wanted to say.
Any comments from staff about that?
Well, we can certainly take a look at any sewer improvements that would fit well with this project as we go forward and bring those back to you. Certainly at this time, we do have a timeline with the sidewalk with this that we're trying to coordinate all the other projects. So we want to make sure that we can get everything put together and not disrupt any of the time frames. But we will certainly look at any sewer improvements that make sense.
If you can get that back to us so we can transmit it to
yes.
interested parties. Okay. Anyone else? Seeing none, I close the public hearing. Council comments?
Just a brief comment. It occasionally one or more of us says the same thing about this kind of circumstance. We're trying to prevent these failures that happen. They don't always line up with sidewalks and water lines at the same time. This is one of those fortunate or unfortunate kind of occurrences. I mean, everybody wants to act proactively to make sure that we repair these things before they fail, because we all know that they're much more expensive after they fail. But I appreciate the cooperative aspect of this and your willingness to evaluate some of these other lines that connect in this particular area. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
And of course, we're going to support this, but I think all of us understand that you'll do your best to see if there's any coordination, any leverage that you can bring forward on the sewer issues in that area too.
Yep.
Okay. Any other comments? May I have a motion directing staff to proceed with plans and specifications for the Manor Drive Stormwater Improvement Project?
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Please read PH 516 and B 15-16.
Public hearing 516 is the construction of shelter, playground, parking lot, walkway, lighting, signage, ADA access, and lake improvements at the Frank G. Nifong Memorial Park. Council Bill 15-16 is an ordinance determining it is in a public interest to construct shelter, playground, parking lot, walkway, lighting, signage, and lake improvements at the Frank G. Nifong Memorial Park, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that a portion of the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids through the purchasing division, determining that a portion of the project shall be done by city employees, providing for payment for the improvement, appropriating funds, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Thank you, Mayor. As mentioned, we're ready to do some improvement projects to the Nifong Park. This project has a budget of $375,000, which is funded by $250,000 from the 2015 park sales tax. This is one of the projects we identified. And as you heard earlier, a $125,000 donation from the Cosmo Club. Nifong Park is a 50-acre park located on Nifong and Ponderosa Street. It's in Ward 6. It's home to the Boone County Historical Society as well as the Maplewood Barn Community Theater. Specifically, this project will alleviate some of the desperate needs we have out on the side in terms of additional parking. One of the projects we're going to include is a new shelter, a larger traditional medium-sized shelter. The shelter we had is one of the original shelters. It's probably over 40 years old. Add a new small shelter, a playground, a fishing dock, and expand the 72-car parking lot. When we did our surveys and talking to people that use the park, more parking was certainly a need, as well as lighting and a 5-foot walkway that connects some of the amenities to the parking areas. In return for their donation of the Cosmo Club, we're going to make this area here on the corner known as the Cosmo Corner. It'll be this area kind of in the southeast section of the park. Cosmo Club is going to request that they name the shelter after one of their members. They'll meet together pending your approval on this project and select a name for that shelter. It's currently an unnamed shelter that we will relocate that named shelter to the other shelter, so we'll have that name there. We'll also be doing some work on the Maple Home exterior. We do not have any improvements on the interior of the home. Public Works will be doing that project with money from the surplus funds from the 2014. So they'll be coming back. We'll come back with Public Works at a next council meetings to introduce this project at the later time. We did have a meeting to the Parks and Recreation Commission. They endorsed it at their November 19th meeting. Obviously, all these improvements were vetted through many meetings with the Boone County Historical Society, as well as the Maplewood Barn Theater, and this was their primary needs for this project. So, following the public hearing, a staff request council approve the ordinance authorizing the project to proceed. I'm available for any questions.
Council questions?
How do you cash a giant check?
Same way you cash a small one.
I'll open the public hearing. Would anyone like to come forward and speak? Seeing none, council discussion?
Just a couple comments here. As usual, I mean, Parks does a great job. This is another good indication of what a dedicated funding source means to programs like this, successful programs like this. And I would be remiss if I didn't express my appreciation to Mr. Loveless and the Cosmo Club for their generous donation, if you will. And on top of all of that, there is this other bit about surplus funds coming from 2014 to take care of some of the much-needed repairs of the Nifong property. Just a question along with that, is there something in the offing in the near future going to address issues regarding the interior of the property?
Yes, that's that project we'll come back with. At the next two meetings, we'll introduce that for you. But Public Works is going to be doing that because they're going to be working with historic preservationists and all that, so they're going to work with that project while we can concentrate on the stuff we're good at, the shelters, the playground, things on the exterior.
Yeah, well, obviously getting the roof on will help
yes.
in that priority, so that's a good thing. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
I'll just say one thing. Again, I would like to thank the Cosmo Luncheon Club for their generous donation. I've had the benefit to have the Cosmo Bethel Park in my ward for many years, and both of my children grew up going to that park, and we still go there to this day. And I think this just goes to show that we as a community value our parks and that we should continue supporting and making sure we take care of the things in our community, and especially our parks. And so I'm glad to see these funds going to benefit and update and bring much-needed repairs to this jewel of our community. So I will certainly support this.
Please call the roll for B15-16.
Council Bill 15-16, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
We'll move to old business. Please read Bill 13-16.
Council Bill 1316 is an ordinance approving the final plat of Somerset Village Plat for a major subdivision, accepting the dedication of rights of way and easements, authorizing a performance contract, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
This is a subdivision plat that had been introduced to go to the consent agenda, but there's been a couple of changes. So accordingly, there's an amendment sheet prepared for the council that makes a few changes to the bill, the title. The surveyor's signature date has been changed. And then there has also been language in sections 4 and 5 accepting a street easement for the portion of the public street here. It's called Armstrong that crosses a dam structure. Authorizes the clerk to record that street easement. So those are the changes, and as long as we've got the plat on the screen, it's 20 residential lots. This is the first residential phase of the Somerset development that already includes two public schools within the platted area, as well as a new city park site between the two. More to come. There's another 27 lots on your consent agenda, known as the Park at Somerset, Plat 1. It's really two streets. It's Armstrong here and then this north-south street. And then there's the beginnings of another east-west street. The big open lot is stormwater detention in the form of a wet basin, and that's what the dam will be detaining. Try to answer any questions if council has any.
Any questions from council? There is an amendment sheet for B13-16. May I have a motion and second to amend B13-16 per the amendment sheet?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on the amendment sheet? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Any more discussion on the amended bill? Please call the roll.
Did you open it up? I missed that if you did.
Public hearing. Would anyone like to speak? Now we'll go to council discussion. Any council discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 1316 as amended, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nowzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Please read B 1416.
Council Bill 1416 is an ordinance authorizing a contract for sale of real estate with the Callaway Bank for property located in the Auburn Hills subdivision to be used for the future municipal service center, directing the city clerk to have the contract recorded and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
With the passage of the 2015 capital improvement sales tax ballot, funding for the amount of $969,000 was allocated for FY 2016 for phase one of a municipal service center to be located in the North Columbia area. Approximately 8.55 acres of land was identified in the Auburn Hills subdivision for this purpose. Public Works staff negotiated with the Callaway Bank for the purchase of four parcels of land located on International Drive for a purchase price of $484,170. Staff is requesting that the council authorize the city manager to execute the contract for sale of the real estate with the Callaway Bank to purchase the property for a future municipal service center. I'd be happy to answer any questions council may have.
Just a question. I'll reserve a comment to later because I think I asked that this be removed and put here. And part of it is because I want to make sure that the public understands, since these are sizable amounts of money, that where these monies came from and what we're talking about. We're talking about $460-some thousand for getting this whole process ready. There's a 2018 capital improvement sales tax extension that was overwhelmingly passed not too long ago. I did a TV interview regarding this, and I didn't want any confusion that that was eventually going to be a bond issue or something. Those monies are on that capital improvement sales tax extension list, yes. And this will be a function of that. So is that just
that's
to
correct.
Get to make sure that everybody in the public who is maybe watching this knows that this is part of what they wanted, and this is then these monies have already been provided for.
Correct, and we are starting with, if you approve this, we will start the design of the new municipal service center. There's an additional $8.7 million to be budgeted in FY18, if everything's good, for the construction of the facility. So it won't be till 2018 before you see construction.
Right.
So along Mr. Scala's vein, this is money that could not be spent to hire police officers to increase patrols.
Correct.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Gary Meyerpeter. I live at 3100 South Winding Trail Drive in Columbia, Missouri, and I'm here representing the Callaway Bank. I'd just like to take a few moments and share with you our proposal, a few paragraphs from it, if I could, please. In an attempt to provide the City of Columbia with support for placement of a police fire substation in the northern sector of the city, we propose to offer the city a bank-owned parcel just off of Rangeline with frontage on International Drive, formerly Bodie Drive. We propose that the bank donate one-third of the ground in question and offer the remaining at a discounted price. Why would we do this? We are interested in seeing stability and improved security in the area and for the city as a whole. We understand the number and severity of 9/11 calls in this sector have increased dramatically in the last 3 to 5 years. We also understand nearby homeowners associations have invested their own dollars in off-duty police patrols to protect their families and their property values. Callaway Bank has a 158-year history of being a good corporate citizen in the markets it serves. We want to see Columbia thrive, and the efforts by the city and the police department and its leadership to bring crime rates down merit our support. We play our part to support these efforts in many different ways. But literally, when we have the ability and the opportunity to do something as a community bank, something extra that can make a difference, we should. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Peter. Anyone else? Council discussion.
I'd just like to make a few comments. I asked to have this removed just to emphasize how important this is. This has been on the list for some period of time. We have a downtown station that is rather cramped, and it's very centralized. It's kind of along the same lines as the transit system decentralizing and more of a distributed kind of network. We on the north side, that is Mr. Trapp and I, have long experienced lots of folks telling us that we need to address some of these issues, primarily as it relates to north of I-70. You have your Bodie Drive. I have my demerit area. There are these hot spots, crime areas. When I heard about this specific piece of property from the city manager, my first reaction was, gee whiz, I wish we could get this in the third ward, right, instead of the second ward. But really, that's not the kind of competition we need to be talking about. We need to make sure that we have this distributed function, not only for police, but for lots of other reasons in this center, if you will. And it will dramatically cut down the response times, both for the second ward and for the third ward, and frankly, some of the fourth ward on the other side as well. I did manage to extract an idea out of the city manager, that is to take two of the officers that we had dedicated to community policing, since we are having this focus about underserved areas in the first, second, and third wards, and in the third ward in particular, to address the issues of Demerit Drive, just like your Bodie Drive, to perhaps establish a police substation in that commercial area around St. Charles Road, which funnels some of the county issues that we have for demerit through some of the neighborhoods that I represent. So in conjunction with all of this attention to getting this new facility, and it bears repeating again, because I don't know how many times I've heard this, we cannot use this money for anything else. We cannot use it for personnel costs. Much as I would like to hire more police officers, we're going to have to come up with a solution for that. But this is a solution in terms of capital improvements and efficiencies and so on. And I'm very glad to see this and very happy to support it.
If I could, I appreciate Mr. Scala's support. I know when we discussed it, the intention was to put it in the third ward because there's more growth there. And I really think it was Callaway Bank's very generous offer of partial donation and a very attractive price. We're getting this for half of what we budgeted that we thought we would have to spend on land. And city, when they see us coming, because we have to do everything in a public process and telegraph our moves, and we don't often get those really great land deals like what we're having here, it's a really exciting possibility for development in the area. If I could put a police station anywhere on the planet Earth, I would put it right there. It's really been a challenge, and I've gotten out and I've talked to folks in all walks of life, from the business owners in the area to Craig Fallone, who runs Borough Behavioral Health and has a housing program out there where they currently host a police substation, from door knocking and talking to folks in the neighborhood. Everybody is wildly supportive of this. There is the only pushback I've heard at all, and I think Mr. Scala must have heard some of the same kind of feedback, that some people would like to see the more officers. So I have asked for the police department, and they have agreed, pending staffing availability, to increase patrols over the next month until we have the community outreach officers going into effect on February 28th. So there's a lot of good things for this flashpoint of trouble. And even within that, people throw around the phrase Bodie Drive. And just to speak for those folks, I've knocked every door on that street. I had an intern do it twice. I've been out there, not just campaigning, but just out as a city. I did a neighborhood barbecue. I've hung out, and I'll tell you, almost everybody, even on Bodie, they go to work every day. You know, they have lives. You know, it's really just a handful of folks who are really involved in this. But there's more that we need to do, and I'm going to talk about other things that we might be able to do as a city in council comments. But this is really a great move. It is going to take a couple of years, which is the other complaint that I've heard, is why can't we have it? And they get it, but you know that they want some sense of relief right now. And it's not just those folks in that area, but the areas that surround it that hear the gunfire and have higher rates of property crime. So I'm very pleased to bring my enthusiastic support to this. But there's more that we need to do as well.
Anyone else? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 1416, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Please read B18-16.
Council Bill 1816 is an ordinance authorizing an agreement for engineering services with HDR Engineering, Inc. for development of an integrated management plan for the city's sanitary sewer and stormwater utilities, appropriating funds, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff.
The scope of services for this engineering agreement involves providing the necessary professional services to develop an integrated management plan, IMP. For the sanitary sewer and stormwater utilities, the tasks identified in the attached scope will meet the city requirements and specific United States Environmental Protection Agency's integrated planning framework elements and provide a plan for implementation. In 2011, the city received notification from the Department of Natural Resources of potential need for an administrative order of consent to resolve sanitary sewer overflows and a certain discharge violations. The city has been negotiating with Department of Natural Resources since that time to resolve the matter in a mutually agreeable way. In the attached letter from the Department of Natural Resources, Mr. Madras confirms that the IMP approach will be the foundation for the resolution to the potential AOC and permit renewal. The IMP process will allow the city to develop flexible long-term infrastructure plans that provide greater control of the magnitude and timing of regulatory uncertainties and prioritize the sustainable and comprehensive solutions that improve water quality and provide multiple benefits for the community. I'd be happy to answer any questions council may have.
Council?
Yeah, I have questions. We don't have a plan now. I guess I remember hearing this in a pre-council discussion, and then I read this, and I'm sort of like, we don't have a plan now, and we have to hire somebody for $750,000 to give us a plan? Because I thought we had a plan to address this issue.
We do.
Why can't we use the plan?
We do have a master plan, and it's to do with our facilities and those kind of things. This is more of a regulatory control. We are to provide, we can only have so many sanitary overflows in a particular year based on our mileage. We went over that in 2008, 9, and 10. And so that's when they come to us and said, you have a problem, we need to correct it. Now, the way that they go about correcting it is to say, you got to spend X amount of money and X amount of time. They don't, the plan doesn't necessarily match up. Well, in 2012, EPA came out with this regulatory integrated management plan process, which allows cities to control their own destinies, basically, and keep the rates at a nominal increase so it doesn't affect the ratepayers as bad. Otherwise, if we don't do this process, they're going to come after us with an order of consent, and they're going to tell you, you got to spend this much money and this much time. We don't care if it works or not. And so this is a plan based on EPA's guidelines. All the scope in here is elements. There's eight elements that you have to meet, and we're trying to control basically our rates by doing this, what people have to pay. I don't know if that helps you, but it's a regulatory process. It's not necessarily that we don't have a plan. It's that we don't have the plan that they require us to have to get through the AOC.
And this is to take care of the problems we had in 2008, 9, and 10?
Some issues we've already taken care of some of them. We have a lot less sanitary sewer overflows than we have back then because of our upgrade to our treatment plant. Uh-huh. Some of the lining that we've done in the Flat Branch area, and so we've seen dramatically reduced overflows because of those.
But we're required by the federal government to spend another $750,000 to come up with a plan.
This is just the start of it. Yes, this is just the start.
As opposed to doing what we're already doing, which is hopefully fixing the problem.
So. Let me try to.
Yeah, help please
this.
Do.
I'll try.
Kevin on noise. He's from the legal department.
So one of the things that this does is, and I'll use the CAM process with Hinkson Creek as an example, because this is actually a kind of a bigger version of that. What happens is that we have a plan trying to fix things going forward, but there's uncertainties in that plan. We're trying to first do the low-hanging fruit. So first we disconnected downspouts, then we made sure the drains didn't go into the sanitary sewer. We're getting eliminating common collectors, and all that is helping. We're seeing improvements as it goes. But instead of having the regulatory body come in and said, drop a number and a X factor on you to get to this, I want you to spend X amount of dollars and X amount of time to try to achieve this goal. What this plan allows you to do is it's an engineering structure where they can still measure success, but let's say we take a wrong turn and one of the things we do doesn't work very well, we can midstream turn with our dollars and try something new that may be more successful. So as we found that there were certain things that we really need to mitigate in the Kingston Creek, we then focus our resources towards those things to mitigate. It allows for more flexibility with your dollars as you go instead of really X to Y mandates.
And that's what this plan,
yes.
These guys are supposed to tell us how to do that?
Yes.
And not only that, is we have, just like the CAM process, it's very much, we develop a community outreach program, which the stakeholders, we get a lot of input from the stakeholders, like we do the CAM process, and that drives a lot of what we're going to do, what the public wants us to do. So that's all documented in this as well. It's okay. A public process.
So just by way of a clarification, we really, in essence, have very little choice. Otherwise, we're going to have more expensive alternatives in the long term because we may even wind up with fines that may accrue in the long run. So we have to do something here, and this provides us with the most flexibility in solving these problems, which we are told we have to solve, right? Not only that, but we have a public health issue that we got to deal with our own public. That's on top of everything else, and that of course is paramount. But I think in this case, this is the kind of thing that this is the least worst alternative to solve the problem, so that we don't have bigger problems in the future. That's how I see it.
And to give you some context, Mr. Scala, we did the master plan starting in 2003 to 2006. It cost us around $850,000 to do that master plan, 13 years ago. This is a lot like that. And so it's very intensive. It's global. And, do you remember when I think EPA dropped the TMDL on us?
I do remember, yes.
It was going to cost us hundreds of millions of dollars, but we said, hey, the public needs to weigh in on this, and we went in a different process. This is much like that. We don't want them to drop a $100 million bomb on us, say, you got to do this, and spend this much money in this amount of time. That's all they tell you,
So. No. And as an aside, I'm still working with that CAM group as a
right.
function of that,
right.
So I understand.
So this gives us a lot more flexibility than what EPA has done in the past to the bigger cities than us. And we really want to follow this process.
And I also want to stress that we are working with DNR right now to help effectuate this. And throughout this whole process from when we first started talking about the AOC, one of the reasons I think that they've been working with us so well is we have been pushing forward to solve this problem and spending money to solve it the entire time we've been working on this. We have not been sitting on our hands. So I think that's really something important to consider as well.
Any other questions? Would anyone in the public like to speak? Any council discussion? I'm going to make a comment that you do not want to be on the wrong side of a EPA mandate because their mandates you know, doesn't involve any citizen impact. I distinctly remember when the TMDL came down the road, and just I wasn't aware we had a problem. Now all of a sudden, they're mandating a $300 million fix. They wanted for 3-inch rain for the city of Columbia to find 140 acres to store 1 foot of water. And nobody had ever done it, but they were telling us we need to do it. And it took a lawsuit by the University of Missouri with the county commission, the county of Boone, and the city of Columbia. It took a lawsuit against the EPA that resulted in a settlement. They didn't want to go to court, and that settlement was based on the formation of the CAM. But I think the amount of money that is at risk if you are on the wrong side of that regulatory agency is unfathomable. And I think that it's a lot of money, but it could be a lot worse if we're not proactive. Any other comments? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 1816, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
We'll go to Resolution 1416.
Consent agenda first.
Pardon me?
Consent agenda.
Okay. We're not new. Okay. Please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 1216, 1616, 1716, 1916, and resolutions 816, 916, 1016, 1116, and 1216.
Call the roll.
Bills 1216, 1616, 1716, 1916, and resolutions 816, 916, 1016, 1116, and 1216. Mr. Trapp.
Yes.
Mr. Scala.
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Ms. Nauzer.
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. McDavid.
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin.
Yes.
Please read R1316.
Council Bill 1316 is a resolution authorizing a contract with Burlington Associates in Community Development LLC for consulting services to assist in the planning and development of a community land trust organization transferring funds.
Staff.
This is an item that was prepared in response to council request at your last meeting that we bring forward a contract for services and the transfer of funds, council funds, in the amount of $19,000 to be budgeted for a community land trust consultant. And the Community Development Department has identified Michael Brown of Burlington Associates as a consultant that is qualified to do this work. And I'll explain that it's really two different or two contracts, one that would be $4,000 maximum, after which that would be, information would be presented to council. It would really be a feasibility analysis that would allow you to make a stop or go decision. And if it's go, you would enter the next phase, which would be a maximum budget of $15,000. And that would produce the deliverable of a strategic plan and an operations plan for the beginning of a community land trust. To my left, I think you know Mr. Randy Cole, who's the housing program specialist with the city or supervisor with the city. And we'll try to answer any questions you may have about agreement.
Yeah, just a question. That is that I think you've answered my question, kind of. That is, it's a two-part contract, and one is contingent upon the other, and it will come before the council to make sure that happens. The reason I say that, I'm very supportive of this idea, and I think that we're going down the right road. I know Mr. Thomas was behind introducing some of this, and I applaud him for doing that. There's lots of approaches to affordable housing here. This is one of them, and I think we need to have lots of arrows in our quiver, if you will. I mentioned a month or so ago to look into the idea about homelessness, tiny house ideas, Nashville and some other places, Austin and so on. I don't want to just run out of money and run the table here for any one particular, because I think diversifying this capacity that we have for affordable housing is a good thing. And with those assurances, I'm certainly willing to support this. But I sure want to explore some of these other options as soon as we can to make sure that we understand what kind of approaches may be successful in terms of affordable housing in this community. We desperately need that approach.
Any other questions? Would anyone in the public like to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to council discussion. Oh,
there's a comment, Mayor.
Hello, my name is Scott Bias. I live at 3160 South Crestview, Columbia, Missouri. I'm a PATH supervisor. It's Projects for Assistance in Transition from Homelessness. It's at a local community support agency. And I work day in and day out with the homeless population who have mental health disorders. And this proposal is a good step in the right direction, but the numbers that you're talking about aren't even going to touch the problem that's out there. Part of my job is the SOAR initiative sponsored by SAMHSA. It stands for SSDI Outreach Access Recovery. And in that, we train other specialists to get SSI and SSDI for homeless people who have a mental health disorder. And so we can get funding for them to pay for their own place through either Columbia Housing Authority or other subsidized housing. And with that piece and with more housing here in Columbia, we can make steps towards ending homelessness here in Columbia. Thank you for your time.
Anyone else? Moving to council discussion.
If I could comment, been interested in housing trusts for a long time. The real key element of a housing trust is that it locks in affordable housing. The city of Columbia is already in the affordable housing development business. We don't spend general fund dollars on this. We spend community development block grant and home funds that support those initiatives. They're federal pass-through dollars that are narrowly prescribed on what we can and can't do with the money. Some portion of the housing that we have developed and sold to income-eligible buyers has moved out of the affordable housing market and has moved into the rental market, because after people match their requirements, I believe it's 10 years, then it becomes their house to do with whatever they like. They can sell it at a very high rate. They can sell it to someone who's going to rent it out at a high rate. And so what a land trust does, and it's a structure that is new to us, but we need a land trust that is going to be, it's going to maintain representation and influence by the city. And so there's a number of different structures that can be built. Most of them are built around a nonprofit structure. So I have offered to serve on that board to make sure that the long-term interests of the city are represented. I have a lot of things that I'm involved in, but this is important, and I've decided to commit my time on an ongoing basis into perpetuity because I think it's important. Mr. Ruffin offered, but he has a lot of commitments, and Mr. Thomas as well, but I have decided to make that commitment to ensure that our interests continue to be represented. We need to have a business plan to make sure that as we go forward that we have things in order and that we build the best possible structure. We know how to bring on units. We're going to bring on those four units on Lynn Street, whether we pass this tonight or not. It's just a question of whether we're going to be able to spend the money to bring in the technical assistance for the creation of the bylaws and the organizational structure and the strategic planning process to make sure that this is a viable operation. So it's a very small amount of money to make sure that it's viable, that there's resources. I suspect it is because we're bringing in these units already. A land trust becomes a vehicle from which people who believe in a affordable housing, and the Affordable Housing Symposium brought stakeholders from across from Columbia, from people who are interested in living in affordable housing, all the way to developers and bankers, and there's a strong community interest. And as land prices continue to rise, especially in the central city, housing affordability is going to become more and more of an issue. And the beauty of a land trust is that it locks in the affordability into perpetuity. So there's going to be increased pressures, and we'll see more of the affordable housing that we spend our precious dollars to develop fall into the rental market unless we act to guard those interests. The city of the future will be very thankful that we were forward-thinking enough. This doesn't preclude other community land trusts. The Housing Authority began a pursuit, and if they were still moving forward on that, the city had no interest or desire to do that. But when the Housing Authority recommitted their resources because of the RAD program to extensive renovations, then they don't have the capacity to do that. And so the only way that we're going to move forward on a land trust is if we do it as the city. It doesn't preclude other land trusts from forming or from, you know, getting properties. But it provides a vehicle where some community-minded folks might donate the land, and then we would hold that into perpetuity. So I'm asking council members, you know, certainly council reserves are short this year, but I can't think of a more important thing that we can address as a long-term affordable housing situation here in Columbia.
Anyone else?
I'd also like to extend my endorsement of this recommendation. This is an important initiative that will ensure the longevity of affordable housing for our community and ensure that it will be passed on from generation to generation. Randy has found an excellent consultant to come in and who will guide us through this process and give us the information that we need and help to move it along in a timely manner so that we don't have to continue to talk about it. We can actually get something done.
Well, anyone else?
I'm going to say I'm still on the fence on this issue because while I certainly do support, and we've talked about affordable housing for some time now, we don't have a affordable housing policy. So I'm thinking if we're going to build four or five land trust homes a year, I mean, over 10 years, we're only going to have 50 homes. In the course of a city of 100,000 people, that is not solving an affordable housing problem. It's chipping away at the edges. And so while I'm not necessarily against spending this money, I would like to hold off until we actually come up and say, what are our goals? I mean, what are our goals as far as affordable housing? How many houses do we want to put into this stock? What is the multifaceted process we want to go through? Because the land trust is not going to solve the affordable housing issue in our community. It's just not going to do it. If, you know, we can only afford to do four or five houses a year, and we don't have a plan on how much money we're going to need over the term, we don't have a projected of we want to help X amount of people get into affordable homes. We just don't have any of the guiding principles, I think, that we need to have a sound policy moving forward. And, you know, we've kind of dwindled through our reserves, and we're only in February. So we've got to October for the remainder of those council reserves. So we're getting towards the end of that funding. So I'm kind of remiss of doing this now. I would personally like to wait for a couple months and have a little more in-depth conversation of what are our actual goals.
Anyone else? Let me just say that I endorse this bill. I view this as an evaluation of the business plan. I won't be on the city council when these decisions are made, but I challenge the public and I challenge the council to take a very strong look at this business plan to make sure it is viable. I've already said that I don't know where the competence to design, build, monitor, repair, maintain these houses is going to come from. I could be very wrong. Skepticism doesn't mean that you're always right. And to sort of echo Councilmember Nowzer's comment, you know, the Lynn Street properties puts $500,000 of general fund revenue at risk. because we are, if it's accepted by the council, we are responsible for the mortgages. And so reporting $500,000 of precious general fund revenue, that revenue which pays for police officers and firefighters, we're putting it at risk to serve 12 members of the community when we have 20,000 people living in poverty. So view me as a skeptic who has been wrong in the past. I hope I'm wrong this time too. But I will support this resolution. Anyone else? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 1316, Mr. Trapp.
Yes.
Mr. Scala.
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer.
Well, I'll follow the mayor's lead. I guess I'll go yes and be the second skeptic.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. McDavid.
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin.
Yes.
Resolution 1416 is based on the very good work.
I need to read it.
Pardon me?
I need to read it.
I was going to read it.
Okay.
He's trying to but save you.
No,
some
I just. No, this is you know, in meeting with the county commission, this is led by the very good work of Dan Etwell, presiding commissioner, and it's a resolution that I will make the motion to accept this resolution, but I'm going to read it for the general public. I think the council has seen it. But it's a resolution recognizing the value of the University of Missouri to the economy of the City of Columbia and expressing support for adequate funding of the university by the State of Missouri. Whereas the University of Missouri was established by the people of the State of Missouri in 1839 as a public land-grant research university dedicated to improving the lives of citizens of the State of Missouri, and whereas the University of Missouri, Columbia, is the flagship campus of the University of Missouri system, which also maintains campuses in Rolla, Kansas City, and St. Louis, and whereas the University of Missouri has students enrolled from every country, from every county in the State of Missouri, every state in the Union, and over 100 countries around the world, and whereas the University of Missouri, Columbia, is the largest employer in mid-Missouri with more than 13,000 full-time employees, which is critical to the economy of the local area, including but not limited to the City of Columbia, the County of Boone, and the surrounding counties of Cole, Montauk, Cooper, Howard, Randolph, Audrain, and Callaway. And whereas, with over 18,000 full-time employees statewide, 2.5 million Missourians receive services from the University of Missouri Extension in every county of the state, and a network of small business and technology development centers throughout the state, the University of Missouri system is an important financial component of the entire State of Missouri. And whereas recent advancements in many areas of research and development, such as nuclear medicine and improvements in nuclear power plant design, can and likely will have worldwide impact for generations of families if research and development activities at the University of Missouri are funded and continued. And whereas the economy of the state is inextricably tied to the continued viability and success of the university, now, therefore, be resolved by the Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri, as follows, that the City Council desires to express its sincere and strong interest on behalf of the citizens of the City of Columbia in supporting the University of Missouri as a statewide institution and asset of all Missourians. Further, that the City Council hereby requests our elected representatives recognize the enormous value of the University of Missouri and its essential educational and financial contributions to the State of Missouri by exercising their executive and legislative authority in such manner as to continue to adequately fund this important component of the economy of the great State of Missouri and cause no harm to the staff and students of the University of Missouri, nor the hardworking families of the State of Missouri served by the university. That is the resolution that we're asking that I'm asking the council approve. So if there are any questions, you may ask that of the legal staff at this point.
It sounds very well written, and I'm very supportive of it. Thank you for the legal staff and
yeah,
for
thank
you.
Thank you.
And for Nat, you know.
Does anyone in the public like to speak? If not, we'll go to discussion.
Yeah, just without question. I mean, there has been some tension between the county and the city over some things at late. There can be no question that there is no tension between these various independent governance authorities to endorse the University of Missouri. I mean, it's why a lot of us came here. Certainly, is why I came here. And you know, it's facing the same kind of funding reductions that we tend to look at in terms of losing money on the internet and so on with sales taxes. The funding reductions are starting to creep up with respect to how the state supports its own university, and anything that we can do to support this and endorse this kind of attitude towards an employer that means as much as it does to this state is something that I certainly will subscribe to and endorse, and I appreciate the resolution.
Yes, I will concur that I appreciate the work in bringing that resolution before the City Council and in our community. I don't think we can stress strongly enough how important the University of Missouri is to not only Columbia, Boone County, the surrounding region, and our state and country as a whole. And I would just implore the people down at the state, our state representatives, to focus on the issues that are important to the state. The state of Missouri has so many issues, and getting involved in this and threatening to pull funding just is not how I envision the legislatures of the state of Missouri to act. Again, there are many important issues that our state legislatures need to be focusing on in any conversation about pulling funding or punishing anyone at the University of Missouri for the unfortunate events that that came about, I think is wrong thinking. And I think the University of Missouri is quite capable with their competent staff and their new leadership to address these issues and bring a resolution that the students, the faculty, and the people of the state can be proud of. So I fully support the University of Missouri and ask our state legislatures to please stay out of the fray and please focus on the things that are important to our state.
I also agree. If there was ever a time when we should make a strong public stand in support of the University of Missouri, now is the time. And so this resolution is a great opportunity to do that.
I am in total agreement. I appreciate the mayor bringing this forward. I think it's a good time for us to stand with the university and show them some support.
You know, I mentioned the county and the city, and there is the folks out there too, the community. And I'm not often a purveyor of information from the Chamber of Commerce, even though I've been a member since 2004. But even in terms of the chambers endorsed from the Government Affairs Committee, the endorsement of their legislative priorities, they are on board as well, just like everyone else. And this has brought a lot of folks together. And underscores how important this is to our community and state.
May I have a motion second to endorse the aforementioned resolution?
We're voting on the resolution. It's not a motion. It's a resolution, so we vote on it.
Call the roll.
Council Bill 1416, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Read the introduction and first reading bills.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 2016, 2116, 2216, 2316, 2416, 2516, 2616, 2716, 2816, 2916, and 3016, first reading.
We'll move to reports. Report 1116 is an informational report on the North 763 Community Improvement District. It's a report stating the services provided, revenues collected, expenditures made during the fiscal year, and it provides public copies of the written resolutions that were approved by that CID's board. Does anyone have any questions? If not, I'll yield. We'll move to general comments by the public. I'll yield 3 minutes to anyone from the public who wants to speak about anything.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. Tonight, glad to see a short meeting for you all, and the fact that you're going forward with the discussion of land trust is very important. We have a lot of loose ends in the area of homelessness that you're well aware of, as I speak on it quite often. As the week ended, we had the death of an individual from an overdose. I do not try to keep up with what's happening, but I would think the city manager would realize the overwhelming task of the police officers that's involved in these. I'm being told ambulances and police officers constantly. If someone needs to be on site constantly to reduce this issue, it might be well worth looking into. We will be looking at a change in leadership, as the city will. The current pastor, Meg Hegman, will be leaving us in June. And as a result of this, I feel major changes will come, and everybody has to stay positive, just like we're talking about the University of Missouri. Because when we go through change, we have no idea what's ahead. And thank you all for everything you've been doing all along, and make sure the effort of homelessness is addressed. When Carl mentioned tiny houses, I got to see a concept. And if some independent contractor could even go after it, you're talking about a central building with very small homes built around this central building. And this one discussion was, that's your space, but yet your common television, showers, and other issues take place in the larger building. So everyone has a place to lay their head down, and other facilities are inside a larger structure. Something well worth looking into. Thank you.
Anyone else? We'll move to council comments. You want to start?
Yeah, I just have one thing. I distributed through the city clerk a communication that I received from a gentleman from Ohio State University. His name is Bill Frelick. He's part of the law school at Ohio State University. I met him at a National League of Cities leadership summit in Orlando last fall. He asked me to review some of the drafts of some of the materials that they were working on, and I distributed the result of that work. He has in the communication, he listed the Divided Community Projects publication. This kind of fits in the aftermath of Ferguson. It also fits in with the Race Matters. I wish some of the Race Matters folks were here, but I'll make that available to them as well. But it has to do with dispute resolution, and for example, it says key considerations for community leaders facing civil unrest. This document addresses key considerations for leaders facing this unrest. And then there's another bit of it saying planning in advance of civil unrest. And then it says this document distills lessons from recent experience with civil unrest that can be useful. It was a very engaging conversation and a give and take back and forth with comments. They have finally made all of this available online. And if there is anyone out there who wants some of these links, I'll try and distribute them to as many folks as I can. I hope the council takes a look at some of these things, and I think it fits with our whole idea of social equity, racial equity, and equity in general. So appreciate the time. Thank you.
I do actually have something. I know it's almost impossible to believe. I wanted to mention Stevens College. As somebody who drives down Broadway all the time, I've noticed the banner that they have over their pedestrian walkway. And it says, hate has no home here, which I believe the students at Stevens College decided was the banner that they wanted and the way they wanted to look at things. So I just thought it was interesting, and I wanted to let them know that I see it, along with anybody else who drives west on Broadway under their banner. Second, I've gotten some comments from friends about clear-cutting at the MKT Trail having to do with, I think, the sewer line. And while people say, yes, we do need to do some cutting, obviously, to put the sewer line in, they were wondering if there was any way to perhaps not do quite so much clear-cutting. I have no idea if there is or not, but I'm passing that comment and question along.
Into.
And then What about checking the level of lead or anything else in our drinking water? I know that we get it from aquifers. You told me that. But what do we do to make sure our drinking water is safe? So I thought I would pose that question.
That's a perfect topic to prepare a report on and come back to you with. And the short answer is we're smart enough not to use the river, which is quite dirty, quite frankly. So we start with a cleaner source than the river. We start with groundwater, and which has a natural filter on it. And then we treat it, and we test it very carefully every day. So I can safely say there's no lead in the water. And Ted, do you have anything you want to add to that? But it's a great, timely question, and we'd love to come back with a report about it.
Okay.
So every year, as a regulatory requirement, we do water sampling, and we do a very in-depth water sampling that we have to turn in every year. And certainly lead is one of the items that gets sampled on our system. And the lead is sampled on our distribution system. So just this table is what we send out to the customers. We make it available to everybody. So if you look at the table, the maximum level that's kind of like anything below this is not a problem is 15.
Ed, is there some table we're supposed to look at, or are you?
No, I'm telling you this is on the website. I'm just going.
Oh, okay, perfect.
So anyway, the maximum allowable lead out of this table is 15.
Okay.
And so on our system, when we actually sample on the distribution system, it goes from really undetected to the biggest number we've found on our system is 2.63. So the highest number we've ever found on our distribution we sample is five times less than the allowable limit on this. And to give you some sort of an idea of why that is, like Mike said, we have excellent source water on our system, excellent source water. We go with an alluvial aquifer on our system, so we pump from the McBain River bottoms or bring the water up, and then we go through a treatment plant. It's kind of a four-step process. We go through aeration, which gets rid of hydrogen sulfides. The softening piece is the lime residual softening. And I want to just a minute spend on that to make sure you know we put lime in it. It basically combines and settles out calcium and magnesium, but it also puts a lime softener in the water. And at that time, that's where we control the pH. And I want to go back to that in just a second. Next two steps are filtration and disinfectant. So the reason that we're sampling on the distribution system is because most of the lead is actually picked up in the distribution system. Coming out of the plant, Mike's right, there's really none there. What it is you want to keep the water so it's not corrosive to pick up lead out of the distribution system. So there's two things that help is we have a lime softening system, which basically coats the pipes with a very innate layer of the lime softening, which does a really good job, and you keep the pH above 7. Which keeps it out of the acid or the corrosive range, and our pH is always run in the mid-8s. So between all those, we've got very good lead numbers on our system. We've always had them that way.
And do we check some of these? Do we check at the whatnot in the homes, in some of our older homes that have lead?
That's where these distribution samplings are happening. We sample 50 different homes around the communities every year.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I hope that gives some peace of mind.
Yeah, just a couple questions to follow up on that because it's interesting. I was talking to somebody about groundwater in general, and some of this may be directly related, some of it's not quite so related. But is there a testing protocol as well for some of the drugs that are flushed into the system that never really affects that is all filtered out by the time it gets to the wetlands and so on and so forth? Is that the...
Well, yeah, I think what you're referring to is the pharmaceuticals type influence,
right.
and there is a really minor level that's we've seen coming up everywhere over the last 30 years, but it's very, very small levels at this time, and it's almost to the extent that we can hardly have the tools to detect it, but we have seen that it's just at the very bottom
and
of
the other range. The other question that's related to this, a few years ago, I don't remember the specific component that we were talking about, but it was in closed systems, primarily the fire hydrants and so on, that something was accumulating, particularly in the ends near these closed systems that we were trying to get rid of. Was that ever resolved and whatever
yes,
happened?
Yes, it is. That has to do with what I think you're referring to as the TTHMs, the total trihalomethanes.
That's right.
So what that is as you put chlorine in your system, it continues to react until it's out of the system. But if you if you leave it in there long enough, then this is a byproduct of the disinfectant. So what we do during times of the year now is we'll actually put the chlorine, have it time for it. It's called a concentration time or a contact time. And when you get to the end of time, we actually freeze the chlorine with an ammonia type of thing. And so we have a chloraminated system as opposed to a chlorine system. And this is what the DNR and EPA mm-hmm. recommends we do.
So that has solved the problem.
Yes.
We've taken measures to make sure that that's not a problem.
It has.
Thank you.
I have two things tonight. Let me pull them up here. First one is, last year I had a couple conversations with some individuals in our community, and we were talking about people's ability or some people's inability to have a garden, have vegetable gardens when they're in their homes. And I really think that people have the right to be able to have a sustainable living philosophy and help to grow the food of which they consume. We kind of went through some of this with the chicken ordinance, which I readily admit that while I voted against it, I've come to have a change of mind on people's ability to provide for themselves. And so I would like to have city staff look at our ordinances and make certain that there's nothing within our ordinance framework that prohibits people from having small gardens in their yard or container gardens. And I would also like to have staff look at what other communities are doing to make it certain that people with all citizens within their community can partake in a sustainable lifestyle of growing maybe a container garden or a small plot garden in their yard.
Have you heard of problems with that?
Well, there are problems across the country, but I know there are the many subdivisions in that you can't.
Oh, okay.
Because of covenants and homeowners associations.
So I would.
Oh, okay. Well, like my next door neighbors have a vegetable garden in the front yard, but we don't have any covenants in my neighborhood.
Right.
So.
Not saying that. Not saying I'd want to have somebody to turn their front yard into a cornfield. Uh-huh. But I think that people should be able to have the right to grow some of their own
vegetables in
food.
The front yard.
And especially, you see across many communities that people turn vacant lots. I mean, I'm not necessarily asking to go there, but I am asking staff to look at to make certain there's nothing in our ordinances that prohibit people from doing so. Look at what other communities have done in relation to this issue so that all people within our community can enjoy that right to be able to grow some of their own food. And then we had our marathon meeting 2 weeks ago on transmission lines. And I know that issue is not done. But in that conversation, I heard a comment about maybe needing another 161 line from Percy Creek going kind of to our northeast. And so that is reminiscent of hearing the same conversation I had with Dan Dasho in 2005 and knowing that a lot of that area of our community is still rural. We need to look at if that is going to be in our long-term plan to look at that issue today and acquire easements today while it is still rural. Doesn't mean you have to build, but then nobody can come back and say, I did not know. I think I go back to that picture we were looking at in Chesterfield where they had the big swath of easement where those lines were between subdivisions and schools. I don't believe that was something that just happened that way, happenstance. Somebody was planning into the future of where those lines needed to go, and those easements were acquired early before subdivisions grew up around. Trying to retrofit neighborhoods with 161 kV lines just doesn't seem to go well. So I am asking that we begin to look at that process today so that 10 years from now, another council is not sitting here with the same dilemma we are facing today. So those are my two issues.
I've got a couple, and I want to echo Ms. Nauser's call about gardens. That might be something that we might want to look at an ordinance just to give people, certainly echoes the right to farm amendment that we have. And anything we can do to promote those sustainable lifestyles and give people a chance. And I know City Law Robert Trump's Homeowner Association covenants, and I think it's something that we at least owe the public to bring forward. wanted to make some just general comments about homelessness. Last meeting I mentioned the Project Homeless Connect event, which went really, really well. We were able to count 16 unsheltered homeless folks at the event, plus 16 people who were doubled up. So that aids in the overall count that the city leads and a lot of community organizations pull together. And those counts of actual how many people in this point in time are unsheltered really help us compete for federal funding in regards for affordable housing and homelessness prevention services. So once again, the city led a great effort. This year, rather than just counting people, we did a vulnerability index. We're using the, it's called the VI SPDAT because it's a VA thing, you know, so it's got an alphabet soup name. But what we're doing is measuring, just kind of asking people a little bit more about them rather than just catching the count. And then we're using that information for this community coalition of that the city is represented in, my own agency and others, called the Functional Zero Task Force, which is seeking to bring a functional end to homelessness for the chronically homeless and veterans homeless in the next 2 years. It's an ambitious goal, but I think that we can move that, and we're never going to there is some value to setting a goal and having a plan. And so we're looking at a by-name list of who are these folks and what is their deal, and is there something better that they could be doing, and what kind of supports and encouragement do they need. Central Missouri Community Action is looking at tiny houses. I think I've certainly, every time there's an article on tiny houses, 10 people forward it to me because they know I'm interested in the topic of homelessness. Same thing about Housing First, which, you know, I appreciate, but I've been doing that since 2008, so you don't need to forward articles about it. I know about it. So they're doing a survey to see, to garner, like, would people would folks who struggle with homelessness like to live in a tiny house? If they did, would they want to be scattered site, or would they like to live in a tiny house village? So they're laying the groundwork, and they're working for that, and I've offered my support if there's any kind of smooth the path things that we need to do legislatively, because I think we'd want to look at our existing laws and make sure we're not creating artificial barriers. That's one of the big reasons why we have such a problem with homelessness, is things like boarding houses and other kinds of things have really been squeezed out in regards to zoning law. So it's something that we're going to have to take care of. There's a lot of things that we're going to have to do to make sure that there's a home for everybody who wants one. I'm very sorry to hear about Pastor Meg leaving. I hope it's going on to greater things. She's been, you know, Wilkes United Methodist, puts our community at threat because Wilkes United Methodist Church is running the Homeless Day Center, which is a critical, provides addresses and socks and laundry and case management services. It's really been through the fantastic leadership of Pastor Meg, so we're really going to sorry to hear that, because I don't know what we're going to do if we lost Turning Point. We're trying to move towards that, but that's a heavy lift. I think fundamentally the need in the community is for a full-time, all-day place for the day center, because right now Turning Point's open in the mornings, and the library is the homeless day center, for good or ill, in the afternoon. And so I think we need that, and I think we need an inclement weather shelter that can be weather-determined rather than calendar-driven. It can get very cold in those hours, and it can get very hot in the summer. So that's a strategic priority I think we need to continue to address. I had someone reach out to me and say, I wish you wouldn't be talking about issues of folks who struggle with homelessness all the time. There's a lot of priorities in the city. And there sure are. But my general philosophy, if we build a city that takes care of those folks with the most barriers and the most struggles, that everybody who's above that is going to get a lift too. There are a lot of community-level impacts of homelessness. There are a lot of wonderful churches and nonprofits that go and do heroic work to address those issues. So the city has to do their part. I don't think we need to do anything extra. I don't think it's our unique responsibility. It's a community responsibility, but we need to at least match what the churches are doing, for God's sake. They come together to worship God. It's not their mission to end homelessness either. But we at least need to match the efforts of our church, mosques, and synagogues. Other issue, I wish I had talked about this to Ms. Nauser, but I have been running since 6 a.m. literally without a minute of peace. Got a lot done, though. A group of Missouri high steppers have pulled together to see if they can bring that organization back to life. That the city has done noble work. Leah Christian has spearheaded those efforts. I would ask the city manager if I could put these folks in contact with her to find out the groundwork of where they've looked for a place and maybe get some better follow through on the end of those folks. But that would be Tyrone Redman, Willie Mark, and my good friend Christopher Haynes. They're very interested in seeing the high steppers return, and that was one of the recommendations of the Mayor's Task Force on Community Violence. I believe the city's done our part as far as groundwork, legwork, and I think we even authorized some funds some time ago that we never have utilized. So so if I could connect Leah with those. One final update, the Mayor's Task Force on Community Violence had their fourth update meeting. We've focused on the issues of reentry. Really pleased to hear about all of the legwork that we've done as regards to the No Violence Alliance method of call-ins and addressing, identifying the folks most likely to offend and offering carrot and stick approaches. And so I'm pleased that of the legwork the CPD's doing. I'm also pleased to hear that Dan Knight's office, the probation and parole, have also been checking out NOVA. On another matter, I spoke to probation and parole officers, and they're excited about the possibility. So it looks like we might have, you know, a true community coalition to try to address our issues of our most violent crime in a fair and equitable manner that gives people a path out of crime and poverty, but also brings the surety of enforcement for those who want to continue to offend and place our most vulnerable citizens at risk. So apologize for going on and on. Going to be nice to get out of here early. I didn't even get a dinner. So thank you all for your brevity. I wish I would have joined you.
I have two comments.
Okay.
First of all, I just want to say that I'm grateful that the city recognized Pastor Meg and the Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church and Turning Point by awarding them the Columbia Values Diversity Award for their work with homelessness this year. And certainly her departure gives urgency to the work that the Columbia Alliance to Combat Homelessness is endeavoring to do and their plans to establish a comprehensive safe haven, comprehensive shelter for the homeless in collaboration with the city. We're still meeting. We're still meeting, still talking, still planning, still looking for a location, still considering possible funding avenues to bring this to pass. So we are committed to answering some of those concerns that Mr. Trapp has mentioned. I also wanted to just to share with you another important initiative that's taking place in the First Ward with the Boys and Girls Club. We have gone public with our plans to build an expansion to the Boys and Girls Club that will be on the site of the old Sonic site. They will build all the way out to the business loop. It will provide enlarged gymnasium, a large kitchen eating area to teach cooking classes, dressing rooms. There will also be a stage within the gymnasium for public performances, and it will just expand what the Boys and Girls Club will be able to do with the older kids, because right now the teens are at the intersection, and this will bring them all together in this one location and provide the facilities that will help the Boys and Girls Club to be more effective. The cost for the project is $2.5 million, which is not a whole lot of money, and it's gotten a lot of great support already, and so we're moving forward, and we hope to be able to break ground in the fall. So we're moving forward on that, and I'm co-chairing that capital campaign committee. And this pushes us along in terms of our agenda for social equity. And it's an important grassroots community project that's happening in the First Ward, and so we're very excited about that and the support that it has generated.
I see why you didn't want to be on the Housing Trust Board. Well done.
Yes.
I'm going to close by saying that I attended a groundbreaking or a ribbon cutting at 5 o'clock for the Phoenix South Program Women's Center, 6-bed unit for detoxification. And I want to congratulate our colleague and director of Phoenix South Programs for his great work in filling, at least helping to fill a community need. So congratulations, Mr. Trapp.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.
Sorry, I didn't get to attend.
Oh, that's all right, Bob.